Hi, folks. This is Dave Schmidt. I'm your host here tonight on the Sedona Connection. We're doing things a little bit different here tonight. Normally, I have a live program, but tonight I am actually doing a pre-recorded program with my guest, Dr. Sasha Lessen. Now, you had already seen the video introduction. You know a little bit about his background. I have to admit, it's a little tough assignment, and I'm here in Maui, and I'm absolutely loving it being here. I came back again. I had two different people. I actually had three different people I interviewed on this trip. You had heard that in the introduction, or I should say in an information newsletter I put out just yesterday. Today is Monday, January 4th, and I'm sitting here in the home. In fact, it's right around noon here in Hawaii of Dr. Lessen. And I can't tell you how elated and excited and joyful I am to be here. I started on this whole journey about 2.5 years ago. It all started evolving around the currencies of the currency exchange, what's called the RV, the revalue, and the GCR, the global currency reset. And folks, most of you know, I have a background in politics. I've spent 20 years in politics, 12 years as a state senator, and I also have a background in banking and finance and as a part-time market trader. I've been doing that as well for around 20 years. So I understood these backgrounds and I understood what was happening. And I'd also come to understand that if there was going to be a true revalue, a true global currency reset, to pay that, somebody has to come up with that kind of money. And I realized there was absolutely nobody anywhere on this planet that had the money to pay for an RV outside of the Dragon family. And they are headquartered in China, but as I said before, they're not all Chinese. There are different lines of that family. There are 14 different elders that come from different family lines, so they don't always get along. There's part of them that's a little bit dysfunctional. There's part of them that a little bit, I don't want to say fractured, if that's the appropriate term to use, but there are different factions within the family line itself. But the issue was they were the ones that had the possessors of the gold. It was a little about a year and a half ago, I was introduced to the Dragon family through the ambassador, their public spokesperson. For almost 4 months, we would talk 3 and 4 times a week. We would go half hour, 45 minutes, sometimes an hour and a half. Most of it was me just listening to him as he would educate me about the family structure and the family systems and the world economics and how economics and finances really truly worked here on this planet. And we began to realize the role of the cabal that really, through the Federal Reserve, they were directly and indirectly running and controlling the world's money supply. And for those of you who have been to my workshops, you see how I unfold about what is called this financial slavery. We as a human race have been in thousands and thousands of years of what we call financial slavery from people who have ruled over us and have dominated and controlled us. All of this, as I begin to realize, tied into the family, to the Dragon family, and the gold that they had. And they have said that it's their gold. Now, this is still an unfolding story. I'm still beginning to learn more myself, but I am starting to develop and come to the opinion that they are only custodians and trustees of the gold because you have to always trace it back to its source. When I was in politics, I always began to realize if things weren't quite seeming right, follow the money and follow it as far back, trace it as far back as you could go. Well, when I started this whole process about 2.5 years ago, I said, follow the money. Where was the money coming from? And all the money traced back to the Dragon family. And then it was probably about maybe 6-8 months ago, I began to realize there was something that was beyond them. I had heard about this ancient alien race called the Anunnaki. And I had been introduced to Dr. Lessen's book, and I picked it up and I started reading it, and it just wasn't quite flowing at that time. And so I set it down, and it sat there for maybe a good 8-10 months. And then when things started developing within me, when I realized, gee, things don't seem to be flowing quite as I thought they should be as they were coming down through the family. And I want to say totally up front, I totally trust the ambassador. I totally trust the Red Dragon. I believe they have absolutely wonderful good hearts. I believe they have absolutely good intentions. But we always seem to be running into delays and wondering why things weren't happening the way that they should be as it was being explained to us. And I felt like a little bit powerless to understand what's happening here, what's developing, what's taking place. Well, it was about probably 4 or 5 months ago I was inspired to pick up that book again. And as I started reading through Dr. Lesson's book, Anunnaki Gods No More, it just started jumping at me, popping at me, and I began to realize it all made sense. Because the Anunnaki were the ancient alien race that came here to Earth hundreds of thousands of years ago to mine the gold from Earth. And also in his book, you begin to realize that they were commanded to create this royal bloodline family that would rule over the humans. And when I would hear stories like this, in the back of my mind, I was always asking the question, is this just folklore? Is this just channeled messages that I would say aren't well grounded? Is this coming from indigenous cultural history of storytelling? Or is this hard, what you would call archaeological facts? Hard data, historical facts. And when you know it comes out of archaeological evidence, you really can't argue with it. Now, hold on here. It looks like my... It looked like the recording there had to block a little bit. But it's hard to argue with archaeological evidence because the only way it could be wrong is if the original people or beings who wrote it down were deliberately telling us a lie, not telling us the truth in what they wrote down. But we always have to go under the assumption that the archaeological evidence is the best facts that's available to us. And everything began to fall into place. And I began to realize the gold belonged to the Anunnaki. And the dragon family were basically created by the Anunnaki to be custodians, to be servants of it, to be caretakers of it, and to use it in an appropriate manner. And most of us can understand, if we understand the role of the cabal, it hasn't been done and used in a very appropriate manner for us as humans. It's been used through systems of greed, through systems of power, control, keeping us in forms of slavery, while those who had the gold were able to basically run and control the world. We understand the history of the human race has been a history of a few kings, monarchs, and dictators subserving themselves over the masses and controlling the masses and keeping us in positions of servitude and slavery to them. And to do that, they had used the power of money, and that goes back thousands of years to the history of that. All this began to fall into place. And I realized that I needed to sit down and meet with Dr. Lesson. Now, when I bring in Dr. Lesson, there's also his wife, Janet, and she is very much a part of that. But in this recording today here, we're just going to bring in Dr. Lesson himself, and we will have Janet. She will come in later. And it was 3 days ago, and we sat here in their home, and we started a conversation, and we both came away with these aha moments, realizing that we were the missing links to each other's story of what we were looking for. He had the history of the Anunnaki that made it all fall into place for me, and I had the history of the family and the gold that made the rest of it all fall into place for him. Dr. Lesson, he has a PhD in anthropology from UCLA. I will let him go into a little more detail and explain all of that, but Dr. Lesson, let me go back and I'll say, when we were here on Monday, we spent 6 hours together, and it was an absolutely wonderful time. So Dr. Lesson, welcome to the Sedona Connection on the radio program. I am so glad to have you here as my guest tonight, and I think we can definitely say this is not going to be the last one. So welcome, Dr. Lesson.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, you complete a lot of the puzzle for me, too. Yeah, the Anunnaki came here to get gold in the first place. They wanted to make it into white powder to float up in their atmosphere, to preserve their atmosphere as they traveled through this huge elliptical orbit through space, passing through the inner solar system every 3,600 years. And so they were shipping this gold back and processing it. The people that they had their mining operation, about 900 or 2,000 of them all together, seemed to be aging very, very rapidly. And when they saw Noah's flood was about to occur, because Nibiru was coming very close this time, and the Antarctic ice sheet was sliding toward the South Sea, and great glaciers from this ice sheet were about to go plunging into the sea and cause the great deluge, they decided, their commander, Enlil, or Yahweh, decided to let all of us adapted Nibirans. They come from the planet Nibiru. We are Nibirans with a little Homo erectus genes in it, and they created us to mine the gold for them because it was dirty human killing work. And they the Enlil, the commander, decided to let us all drown. However, a Federation representative called Galzu came in and said, "Oh no, you can't," to the Anunnaki, "you can't leave the planet now or you'll die. You've been on Earth too long. You've adapted to Earth." But he slipped a computer program to the chief scientist, Enki, who then put it in the wall of his son, Noah, whose real name was Zeusutra, telling him how to make the immersible boat that Noah took with genetic starts. They buried most of their genetic starts in a diorite chamber right there in Iraq where they were situated. But Noah was preserved. When the commander saw that Noah and his family and their whole village was preserved, he started to attack the chief scientist, Enki. But his son and his and everybody else stopped him and said, "Hey, look, Dad, don't do that. We can use these people who did survive, and we'll rule from them. We can't leave the planet, and anyhow, so let's rule through them, through the sons of Noah, Ham, Japhet, and Shem." What they found, however, is that they could use the monoatomic gold not only to preserve the planet, but to preserve themselves and to stop the rapid aging process that they were experiencing on Earth. And from that time on, they've been using the gold to preserve their life and to live really long periods of time, and also periodically to ship some back. But they've been ruling through this family whose job it was to gather the gold, and they gathered it from every continent, and to keep it for the use of the Anunnaki to preserve their life. And there was only a thousand of the Anunnaki, these people from the sky, from the planet Nibiru is where they came.
Let's take a step back, yeah, because I think what might be helpful for the people is, you know, most of this information is somewhat new to them, but it basically is paralleling to the stories that come out of the Bible.
Oh, yes.
And a lot of people. So what you described, the deluge, is in the Bible as Noah's flood. And you just described Noah, that we thought Noah's ark was really a submersible submarine type of a vehicle.
That's right.
That he received the blueprints to build, and that's what helped him survive the flood, the deluge. And it's interesting also where you see that if you read in the biblical account, up until the time of that, it said, you know, people were living to be 800, 1,000, and 1,200 years old. So what was the shift and change that happened at that time where all of a sudden they went from living to be 1,000 years old to only maybe 100 to 150 years old?
There was less and less miscegenation between the people from Nibiru and the descendants of the hybrids, that's us. And
you know, here's what's interesting. And I've shared this with the folks. You know, I have a Master of Arts degree in Biblical Studies. I had 1 year of Old Testament Hebrew. I spent my bachelor's degree in religion, so I had studied this stuff in colleges for 6 years. And yet through all of the years and 20 to 30 years of being around that stuff, I realized that, let's see here, I think the recording is kind of stuck here a little bit. Every once in a while this recording sticks. Okay, let's see if it's going to loosen up here because I'll have to edit this. Okay, now we're back. I had realized through all my years of studying and biblical study in the years afterward, we could never come up with who was the author of the book of Genesis. Biblical scholars have never been able to authenticate who gave the author to the book of Genesis. And now as all of this information is starting to come out about the Sumerian tablets and the history of the Anunnaki, we're beginning to realize they were the ones who influenced it and who wrote it.
Yes.
And you even brought that out, you know, in your book.
The Bible was written when the Nebuchadnezzar, relatively recently, took the survivors of the his raid on the temple in Jerusalem back to Turkey, to Haran. And there they composed the Bible, trying to put together many ancient accounts. Now, just because we also, I should address this, that just because things are written in stone at the base of statues and on tablets doesn't mean they were accurate. What we know is that they lied and propagandized, and each one of these guys who dictated to their scribes, and they didn't do this dictation until way into modern times, 6,000 years ago, they were each doing a different version to justify their own position and to put down the other people's position, and they left out allusions to all kinds of things that they didn't want us to know. So they propagandized just as with the winners and those in control do everywhere. And so the Anunnaki did it too. But we can get some idea, at least of their view of things, and to see how it accounts for the data. They came to Earth in the first place to get the gold, to put up in the air. They wound up eating it. And to this day, they and their favored descendants eat this gold and monatomic platinum as well to preserve their lives. And they still have great longevity.
Mm-hmm. Let's take a step back. You got into this because you basically became a student of Zachariah Sitchin.
Yes.
And Mr. Sitchin is probably, in my estimation, known as being the foremost scholar that has ever lived on the ancient Sumerian tablets and what has come out of that branch of, you know, anthropology and archaeology. Tell us how you got involved with Dr. Sitchin.
Yeah, I was I ran the welcome room for the speakers for the Prophets Conferences, and the Prophets Conferences put on the trainings for people that were interested in Sitchin studies of the Anunnaki. And so I got to know Zachariah and study with him, and he asked me if I would create easy-to-understand college-level texts. And that's what I've been doing for a long time in my various disciplines. College level means an intelligent 12-year-old can understand it, and that's the way I try to write. And Sitchin's work accounted for all kinds of things that didn't make sense in academic anthropology. First of all, Sitchin's account made sense of how we suddenly appeared in the fossil record, and there was no real missing links between the lemur and tarsier type creatures that were on this planet, nor was there any connection with Homo erectus, the ancestor of Bigfoot, the intelligent hominoids that were already here. Indeed, the Anunnaki used some of Homo erectus's genes to adapt their genome, we are them, to Earth and make mind slaves 300,000 years ago, and they kept breeding with the prettiest girls in each generation, and 200,000 years ago they made a ruling race that was supposed to be their household servants and do that sort of thing. And then 60,000 years ago their chief scientist with his overseer's wife begat the person we call Noah, so 10,000 years ago the great flood was coming, and they decided that they would let all of the slave race drowned and be done with. And they decided, they got intervention from a higher level who helped, Galzu was the name of the ambassador, who arranged for us to survive. And after a while, the Galzu told the Anunnaki and their leaders, basically, your job is to preserve these hybrids and not let them die, to give them knowledge at a pace they can handle, and let them develop as a very unusual species, because their chief scientist was attracted to Homo erectus because Homo erectus was passionate and compassionate and was letting other animals out of their traps and behaving in a way that these cold extraterrestrials, they weren't just cold. They had rage and jealousy and greed and stuff like that. But we have something else. We have loving passion, and it was utterly fascinating to our makers. And they hoped that we would show them how to do better, because they had almost destroyed their planet with thermonuclear war. Most of their men were sterile. They had a terrible system of hierarchy where women were totally put down. And they have been given the orders to get off of it and for a long time, they started warring among each other here, just as they had done on their home planet, until they decided, you know, instead of just having one group of us kill another group of us and have our humans fight their humans, why don't we use credit? Why don't we use money as a way to keep them virtually enslaved in doing what we want? Then that's a much more economical way of controlling everything, and that we can control through the sons of Noah. We can keep the gold coming to us. It preserves our life, it preserves our planet, and it allows us to keep control by the way we extend and retract credit.
So if I'm hearing you, it sounds like a lot of what you call the behavior systems of the people that we would call the cabal, who are powerful, in some cases brutal, ruling controllers, creating wars, killing and maligning, and using the power of money to control the masses here on the planet Earth, so much of their behavior, in essence, it sounds like, comes from the behaviors of the Anunnaki.
Yeah, and it wasn't just by war or credit, but it was also by the use of addictive substances. The cabal finances a lot of its operations by using heroin derivatives from the poppies, and the clandestine military of the cabal protects the Southeast Asian, particularly, and South American poppies that wind up. They also use the drugs to keep the population of the ghettos so drugged up and destabilized that they don't realize that they're being controlled. They barely survive, just like the rest of us. The people that get the money and keep the gold, and Michael Tellinger, my colleague in South Africa, tells me about trains that are still to this day chugging out of South Africa and disappearing off into Mozambique, and not only does the gold on them disappear, but the trains never come back.
So it's almost like what we're seeing is, because we wonder, why are we living in a world where there's so much warring, so much hatred, so much violence, so much killing, so much degradation of the planet? Why are we living in a world that over 50% of the Earth's population lives on less than $5 a day? And yet those of us that live in countries, yes, we can make more money, but yet we're still slaves to our jobs. And we see all of this, the power of the drug cartel. We see the power of the money cartel. What we're really seeing is that we, in some ways, can say that we've been programmed by what we would call this cabal, who in essence are programmed by the Anunnaki.
That's right. A lot of it comes down to an old dynastic change when the king of Nibiru, whose name was Lama, said, let's just pray that the hole in the atmosphere closes up and not really go after the gold. A prince named Alalu killed him, threw him off a tower, and made a deal with the pretender, a guy named Anu. Look, you marry my daughter, Alalu said to Anu, and to your son and their kid, and they had a kid named Marduk, will rule when I'm finished. Well, Anu revolted and wound up killing Alalu, but he did not let Marduk become the next king because Anu wanted his son Enlil to be the one to become the next king of Nibiru. And so as Marduk became more and more and more powerful and was about to organize all the humans, he had started a launch tower of his own in Babil, modern Baghdad. This was the so-called Tower of Babel, that Enlil said, we can't let him have a launch tower. He's going to take over Nibiru as well as Earth. And he bombed the tower and he said, we're going to make sure they have different languages, that their scripts are not easy to read. We'll keep them pitted against each other. And so forth. And so when Marduk finally did get control of the planet after the nuking in 2024 BCE of Sodom, Gomorrah, the Salt Sea, which became the Dead Sea, and the Sinai, and then the fallout from that blew all over Sumer, ancient Iraq, and so that Marduk wound up getting everything. He kept that whole idea. Well, I'll just be the head of all these different organizations and countries, and I'll pit them against each other, and they'll never realize that me and my agents are really controlling everything.
So in essence, what I'm hearing you say is those of us of a human race, while we think in some ways that we are free, and especially in countries like America, we're really not. We think we are, but we only have very limited degrees of what we think are freedom. And also when we see all of the controlling and the powers that have been over us, it really comes back to it's something that has been placed upon us. But let me ask this question now. Then where does the whole aspect of the human free will come in? What are you seeing as shifts and changes? Do you see the potential for us as a human growing out of their influence and their power and their control over us?
Yeah, the technology that they have let us have and they continue to dribble to us has given us enough understanding of the universe so that we understand our place in the universe and we're no longer bound by ignorance. And the Anunnaki have continued to try to help us from Nibiru, but they are limited in how they can help us because they are hierarchical. They are obsessed by who's on top and who's underneath, and they don't think much of women and certainly don't think of giving women authority. However, Anu saw this happening, the king of Nibiru, and he realized he had to do something, and so his solution was to try to get them all on the same page. He ordered all the Anunnaki to come back to Nibiru and said he was going to abdicate and they should all get together and choose the next king. Well, he wanted Nannar, the guy that became Allah, to be king, and then Marduk says, heck with that, and he came back to Earth with 350 of his followers, and they took over all the institutions of Earth. What Anu did is he appointed Nannar as the next king, and Nannar came with a delegation and a bunch of guys and started assassinating Marduk's men, and Marduk's men started killing them back, and we were caught in a war between these Anunnaki factions that have gone right up to this very recent time when Galzu again intervened and said, Marduk, you're not in charge. Nannar, you're not in charge. This is going to be the age of Aquarius. Enki is going to be in charge, and we are going to stop this war. And Marduk said, I am truly sorry for all the suffering that I caused, but it was all part of a bigger plan, and I'm going to make amends. I don't know that I trust him, but that's what he said.
Let me see if it's really interesting because, see, we live here on Earth as humans, and we only live to be, you know, 60, 80, at the most 100 years old. They live to be hundreds of thousands of years old. And I remember what you had described to me is, see, 1 year to us is like 3,600 years to them because we go through a one-year cycle, and their planet takes 3,600 years to go through the cycle. And because they have the longevity genes in them, they can live to be hundreds of thousands
That's
of years
right.
old. So when we see this history unfold, we wonder why are we going through hundreds of years of absolute turmoil and this power-hungry greed and corruption and warring. And to them, it's like a blink of an eye.
Yeah, what a year is the amount of time that it takes a planet to go around the sun, the star. And so this huge orbit that Nibiru makes around Nemesis, it takes that 3,600 years. The reality is that they have the technology, and the extraterrestrials have the technology, and our cabal withholds it from us, the technology to extend our life vastly with stem cells, with substances like monoatomic gold and platinum ingestion, with using holographic projections on missing limbs so that the soma of our stubs can grow back to where the missing limb was. Believe me, they are clandestine military, and the cabal's top people have access to these medical life-extending technologies that is being kept from us.
So if I'm hearing you, They have, for hundreds of thousands of years, have been so superior to us in technology advanced. I mean, because I'm reading in your book, and I want to come back and reiterate, this is not just a bunch of folklore. This is all based on ancient archaeological and anthropological documents that have just starting to be discovered in the last 15, 20, 30 years. Is that
That's
correct?
Right. They did not even use fossil fuel the way we did. Right. They used bitumen to make paved roads and caulk their boats and stuff. But they had electricity using the piezoelectrical variation in Earth with just before dawn. There's this change in energy, usually channeled up through a pyramid. Sometimes this has been facilitated by adding hydrochloric acid and other substances, phosphorus, to make a hydrogen explosion, which pumping on top of stagnant water, going up through the pyramid, being added to by this release of hydrogen, and then facilitated by a series of crystals going out the top of the pyramid and picked up by monoliths and used. How does the light shine in Shambhala and Luxor? It shines by electricity. They had electricity. They used basically Tesla technology, and they didn't need to pollute the environment the way we're doing, although they did almost ruin their environment and ours too with the nuclear wars that they perpetrated on themselves and then on themselves and us here on this planet.
So hundreds of thousands of years ago, they had electricity.
Absolutely.
They had modern technology. They had nuclear warfare. They had what we would call alien spacecrafts that could go zipping across the galaxy. They had submarines. They had everything that you and I can only dream of today in some of our science fiction stuff. They had all of that hundreds of thousands of years ago. And it's been here on this planet for hundreds of thousands of years, but they have kept us in ignorance and darkness and away from it.
That's right. They also used the gold to lighten things, to float things. Moses had a whole bunch of it in the ark, and he kept his people alive with terrible conditions in the desert for 40 years. That was the medicine, the monoatomic gold powder.
Yeah. So, but what we're seeing, you said something that was interesting. Marduk, who was the son of Enki, mm-hmm. had come to the point of realizing, we've kind of screwed up in how we've treated these humans.
Yes.
We've been very brutal. We have been very warring. We have been very calloused. We have been very greedy. We have been very punishing. And we saw them as nothing but useless slaves. And it was when I was here with you the other day, it was either you or your wife, Janet, said something that was really interesting, because I asked the question, well, why are they that way? Because in essence, part of our human race has become a product of that. There's a part of that in all of us is what it is. And it was, I think it was Janet that had said, because their heart chakras are blocked and they don't know how to feel love and compassion. Is that correct?
That's true of most of them. They are centered in their power center, in their solar plexus, and for them it's a matter of who has the greater authority, and that's the way they operate. And they come from a background, as do most space-faring people, of a series of interstellar wars and fleeing from those wars. And Marduk ultimately is saying that he played a part in the divine plan, that everything comes down to the creator of all, and the adversity that we are experiencing is all part of the tempering of our souls as we find our way back to source. And that may be a big rationalization. Don't know as trust Marduk, but I do know that Thoth, one of Enki's sons, came back at December 21st in 2012, and he brought with him many other Anunnaki, and Thoth was able to free himself from working for Marduk, and this is the age of Enki. The Galzu, the higher federation authorities, have intervened, and they realize that fostering us humans is the number one task of those in this sector of the galaxy, for we have this loving potential that can let us reach to the highest levels of oneness. with Source itself?
You know, it's interesting because after we came away from our conversations on Friday, and I went home, and this had just opened up so much new stuff to me. It was almost like what I saw was Marduk and Anar and Enki, those that are the rulers of the Anunnaki, having realized that they really had not done a good job with us, but they saw something in us as humans. They saw love and compassion. And they recognized it lacked in them. In many ways, they were so far so superior to us in all the things of technology and understanding and being able to have logistics and operations and how we would function as a society. But they lacked the very core essence of the things that were the most important, and that's love and compassion. And that's stuff that we as humans have. And it's almost like they have very little of it and don't quite get it. And like they're beginning to wake up. And so what I'm hearing you say is they've come back. And this time they're coming back to fix the mess that they made. And in essence, not only are they coming back to fix the mess that they made, they're also coming back and saying, humans, you have something we need, and you have what we want. Because as a race, we as the Anunnaki know, we cannot evolve. We cannot make our way back to Source or our way back to God until we incorporate that into ourselves. So it's almost like there's the shift and the change, the shift and the change into the age of Aquarius. And ironically, the age of Aquarius is also called the Golden Age.
Aquarius is Enki.
Right, okay. So Aquarius is Enki. And it's the, and so Enki and actually is the good guy of the white hats of the Anunnaki. And he has come and he has returned and he is saying it's time to restore Earth to what it is supposed to be.
Yeah, his big mistake when his special son, Adapa, was brought by his other true Anunnaki sons to Nibiru to meet King Anu, he gave the king a tablet that said, don't let him know the secrets of extending his life, and please don't keep him here on Nibiru. Send him back to Earth because he is such a prodigy. I want to use him to breed. And so that was the big mistake that Enki made. But he and Nimma, his sister and lover, and his son Toth, were given the assignment of nurture this race. Give them technology a bit at a time, as much as they can handle, and they will do better than us ultimately.
It's interesting because, see, I've heard from so many different sources that what we hear in what we call these black ops operations in this world we live in, that in reality, a lot of the cabal and the black op operations, they're 100 years ahead of us in the technology that is out there that they've never released to us. But what I'm hearing you say is now is the time it's going to start being released to us step by step, slowly, bit by bit. And not only that is the gold that will finance basically what is, because we still live in a world of a financial structure, we still live in a world where we're dependent upon money. And these resources are going to be released. And where I have thought for so long it was always the dragon family that was in control of it, what it really comes down to is the dragon family that were the custodians. And it is now Enki and Marduk and Anar that are saying, no, it's going to be starting releasing it. And they understand if we're going to fix what's here on this planet, coming through love and compassion, it also means that financial resources are going to be released unto the humans. And they will use it through love and compassion to fix the planet, to heal what is right and what is wrong is here, to be able to improve the living conditions of everybody around the planet, and predominantly those 50% of the people that live on less than $5 a day so that they're not just living in utter poverty of trying to survive. And what I see is funds will be released that will help the humans, what I call is move into the compassion and to the passions of their heart. They will be able to do what is their heart passions, and they won't be restricted by a lack of money. And in that, when it comes from the energy of the heart, from the energy of the heart chakra that develops this love and compassion, we will shift and change this world, and the Anunnaki are saying it's all a win-win because we need to learn from you as we watch you do it.
Yes.
And so they have the resources, but they're saying, here, we're going to start giving it to you. But to give it to you, we can't just dump it upon you all at once because you still have a thought system of old power and greed, and many of you still have that. And that is why it needs to be released slowly, bit by bit. So we think it's going to take a process of some decades. For them, it's a process of a blink of an eye.
The gold is intrinsically valuable as extending life and conducting electricity without losing any. It's intrinsically valuable. It's got indestructible value. It's not like a paper money.
You know, it's interesting because I always thought about why is it all the way through recorded history you always see that the most valuable possession is gold. It's only been in the last few hundred years that gold has been represented by money, per se. But what it really is, it's the energy that is in the gold. From just a pure physical perspective, gold is known as being the most powerful energy conductor on the planet. But what I'm hearing you say also is what we're learning from the ancient archaeological records is that it is far, far more than that. It has the ability, in so many words, to suspend gravity. It is through the power of this monoatomic gold that they built the pyramids and floated all those big, huge, gigantic blocks into place that we don't even have the technology today to build. They learned how to consume this into their body, and it basically turned the body into an anti-aging body where they could live to be hundreds of thousands of years old. And we are just starting to learn all of that, and it sounds like that we're on the very cusp of a shift and change as a human race, and that 50 to 100 years from now, we are going to be an entirely different species, living differently than where we are today.
I totally agree with your analysis.
And as I share, you know, it's what I have always felt that what I am doing is a divine assignment for me. It's a journey. It's a journey of discovery. It's a journey of understanding. And this, and my time with you, has been one of the very last, I should say, the last link. When I was driving here this morning, it wasn't the last piece of the puzzle, but it was the last piece of the frame of the jigsaw puzzle. The frame is formed. The major pictures are formed. There will still be other intricate interlocking pieces to put into this. But it's a story that we get to tell to help people wake up to what's really, truly going on out there.
I think one of the most important things is to use the compassion and to not be punitive, but to have some kind of truth and reconciliation for those who have perpetrated the atrocities, the false flags that have created the wars and the vast slavery of parts of this most of this population of this planet, and to not be punitive, but to realize that a cabal ultimately are people like us, and we have to get hold of our own greed and our own will to power and our own dismissal of the authority of the feminine in us and in the actual women of our planet. That's where we need to go to a peaceful resolution rather than a catastrophic one.
It was last night. Oh, it was, you know, I'll wake up in the middle of the night, and it's in the middle of the night that your conscious mind, your top-level mind, has quieted and slowed down, and you can start hearing from the deep parts of your subconscious mind. And all of a sudden, things just started coming to me, and I began to realize, hold on, it looks like this is locked up here for just a little bit. We're going to wait for this to come back. I hope this doesn't interrupt the recordings here, but I'll have to work on editing that part out. It was last night in the middle of the night that all of a sudden, you know, the picture began to, again, come into fuller view. The Anunnaki have basically said, we screwed up. It's not so much they're saying we screwed up. It's like we were programmed to not understand love and compassion because we didn't have that. So if you don't have love and compassion, what do you resort to? Power and control. And he says, within you humans, we've been seeing love and compassion, but we also realize there's a lot of you that have been programmed like us. And we have come back to change. We in essence are saying we're sorry. We're in essence we're saying we are repenting. We in essence are saying we are here to fix what we screwed up. We didn't intentionally screw it up, but we were programmed that way, but we're beginning to wake up ourselves. And they realize that their journey back to source, back to God, is dependent upon us.
Yes.
And our journey back to source and back to God, of freeing ourselves from these thousands of years of slavery, is dependent upon us exercising our love and compassion toward them. It's very, very easy to want to be mad, angry, and want revenge against the cabal. But they were nothing more than puppets, is all that they were. Puppets down through the system playing a role. As we shift and change how we view them, instead of seeing them as evil, horrible, ugly, brutal slave masters, we can choose to shift our perception and say they were just doing what they were programmed to do and feel compassionate toward them. That opens the door for all of us, because it will let them see the love and compassion that they need to see in us.
That's right.
And as they see that in us, it opens the door for them to release more of what they have to us. It's a win-win scenario. And the win-win is us as humans showing love and compassion to them, and not greed, not anger, not wanting vengeance, not wanting to kill them, but being compassionate. Now, that doesn't mean that they're not going to be accountable for what they've done. There still is what I call karmic energy. But the issue is we release that out of our hands and don't be brutal toward them in return of how they've treated us. If we give back to them what they've given to us, we will keep ourselves locked right where we are. If we want to advance, if we want to improve, if we want to heal this planet, it's saying we're just going to love. We'll do what Jesus says. Love your neighbor as yourself. And the Anunnaki are our neighbors.
In a way, the Anunnaki are ourselves even. If you look at the universe as I do, as a holographic universe, where everything in the universe is to some degree resonant within us, and we are resonant within every molecule of the universe, then you'll see that the traits of the Anunnaki, let's take anger and rage, if you really say what is the function of anger and rage, what does someone that's angry and rageful really need, it'll come down to love, attention, affection, things like that. And so it's critical that if we realize that we are acquisitive and that we can be angry, and instead of trying to truncate those traits and get rid of them entirely, we embrace them in terms of their underlying needs, then we see that the so-called other, be they Anunnaki or Cabal, is really just a part of self. And if we can come to peace with those parts of ourself, we can be peaceful with their representatives in the outside. And I can tell you that, for example, the more you're comfortable with your own anger and being able to say, what's the function of the anger? Oh, effective action, okay. So the more that we realize that, then others' anger doesn't destabilize us because it's not resonating on a part of ourself that we're trying to repress. Centering ourselves, we embrace all the opposites, and we realize that whatever we think is a center comes out to be a limited perspective tomorrow. And that's what the Anunnaki have realized, and they are reaching out for this loving, ape-like, if you want to call it that, perspective of our Bigfoot brothers, the Homo erectus, that we love all creatures and all beings, and so do they.
This is interesting as we see all this unfold and the history behind it. And again, I want to remind you folks is that Dr. Lesson, he doesn't have just the one book, The Anunnaki Gods No More. He actually has three. All three of them, they kind of in some ways parallel each other, but yet each one gives a little bit more than what the previous one had. And I had just finished reading the third book just before I came here on this trip last week, because I realized I wanted to have that picture. And it's in your last book that I really enjoy how you laid out the introduction, because it really shows and says, the traits that we have here on our planet, of the things that we really don't like to see in us as humans, were really as a product that it was something that was passed on down to us. There is this interesting phrase that appears in the Bible, and it's predominantly in the Pentateuch, the first five books of the Bible, and it appears four times, where it says the sins of the fathers are passed on unto the third and the fourth generations. But we can say we get to be the generational breakers. We don't have to follow in the footsteps of our ancestors. We don't have to follow in the footsteps of our forefathers or our foremothers, if we even want to bring in that into case. And we can make the shift and the change. We can wake up and we can be the people who are shifting and changing. And what I say is we are doing that. We're experiencing the shifts and the changes here on this earth. I've expressed it in terms as that the earth has moved into a new place into the galaxy. It's moved into the place where there's this photon band of light energy that is coming onto us. Light wakes you up. Light changes and shifts your, this photon light can shift and change your DNA. And what I'm really hearing and seeing from so many different sources is it's healing us from the inside, is what it's doing. And as we heal from the inside, and as we embrace that and walk into that, we will find ourselves becoming more compassionate toward one another and being able to express and show more compassion to us. And all we can do is win from that.
Yeah, I think it's really important to get over this. We have to be bound by the past. The nations and religions that have been established were established deliberately to keep us apart and not realize our oneness, and it really, the history doesn't matter. What we really need to do is honor each being. Every being has its own light to shine, and just because someone is born in a certain genetic line doesn't cut any ice with the universe, because every light that shines, every consciousness, even things you don't think of as consciousness, like mountains and islands, have their own consciousness and have something to contribute. And we need to honor that and not just be ruled by a bunch of old men who have access to the gold.
It's interesting. We're down to about 8 minutes left. I mean, we can do whatever we want because it's a pre-recorded program, but we wanted to keep it into the area of about an hour. And is before we start maybe doing some concluding statements and wrapping up the picture, is there anything else that you would want to add to this? What are some of the things else that you'd like to share?
Gandhi said, if you go by vengeance, an eye for an eye, the world will be blind. I think it's time to go heart to heart.
Oh, that's an absolutely wonderful statement. So to kind of wrap up, I guess, or maybe to make some kind of a conclusion to draw the whole picture, I know myself, I've come into this being able to be related and being in conversations with the dragon family, predominantly the red dragon family. That's the line of the dragon family. And over the last, you know, couple of years, I have learned that they're the ones who are the possessors of the physical gold as humans here on the planet. They have pretty much for hundreds and thousands of years kept that to themselves, and they are beginning to wake up and realize that it's time for them to begin to releasing it unto the human race. But then it was through this process and this journey I began to realize that they were not really the originators of it. It was the Anunnaki who were the originators of it. And there's this dragon family are basically the creations of the Anunnaki, because they were told to create this royal bloodline family that would rule over the humans and would keep them in ignorance and darkness, in essence, till the right appointed time. And I have said before that this royal bloodline race, I don't want to know if it's a race is the appropriate term, but this royal bloodline family, as it's been explained to me, that they consist of royal bloodlines from around most of Europe and Asia. They come from Europe, the Middle East, Asia, and China, and that is where they are predominantly from. And they comprise that council, that senior council of the dragon family. And this gold, in essence, belongs to the Anunnaki. They were the ones who basically had mined it. It is theirs, and they are now returning. They are returning and saying it's time to fix what we screwed up. or what we didn't do well with. You can use whatever term you want. But we only projected our own behaviors upon to these humans, and we're realizing for our own sake, if we are going to grow, if we are going to evolve, we have to learn something and gain something from the humans that we don't do very well, and that's having love and compassion. And so I think it's safe to say we're moving into an era, and we're going to see this happen. And people say, well, why do you get to tell this story? I don't know. Why did Moses be Moses? You know, why did Jesus be Jesus? I'm just here telling the story, and I think I can even return that to you, Dr. Lesson. This is, why do you get to tell the story? I haven't heard this full story from anybody else. And I'm sure there's others out there, there are others out there that have lots and bits and pieces of it, but this is the first time I've seen the full picture of what I could say the last piece of the frame has been put into place as you and I had come together.
Yeah, I've had visions and dreams throughout my life. It started with the dream that I had when Egypt and Israel were at war, of a great pit being dug with tractors and stuff, and Egyptians and Israelis putting tanks and aircraft and stuff in this pit and shoveling earth over it, and then dancing their traditional dances and holding hands. And I realized that the responsible course for me as a scholar is to see if I can contribute to bringing about world peace. That's why I'm doing all this.
I know for me, I've been a public official, I've been a public face, and part of my job is to be a public spokesperson in telling the story. And I see that and I experience that. It was about, just under 2 years ago, my life went through a huge, complete shift and change. And I've shared this with the folks on the programs. This is, since then, my life seems to be flowing with what I call a flow of ease. I don't struggle financially anymore. I don't struggle trying to wonder who am I and where do I fit. Things just continue to find me and they come to me, just as being here with you has found me and has come to me. Yeah, I still had to come here, but it's like these doors just continue to open, and there seems to be a divine guidance in everything that is happening here. And we do get to do that. We come to a place in our lives about when we get to operate that way. And I've shared with that in some of my past programs about, what do? How do you get there? How do you get to this place where things flow for you divinely? If I could encourage all of you that are listening, is to stay on that path. Keep doing your work of what you call finding God, finding the love of God, loving one another. And then when you do that, life begins to flow for you. Dr. Lesson, you and I are sitting here and we're beginning to experience that and to see that. We know we have a divine mission in what we are here to do. And we are here to do that, and we know we will do that to the best of what we can when ours. We know others will come and tell the story as well. But this is a story that once you grasp it, once you get it, once you find it, it begins to make sense to you. And there's something about understanding that begins to set you free. It's like, I get it. When you're at that point, you get to really start moving in a different direction for yourself.
I'd say even our finitude, the short lives that we have something to contribute. Because if you're going to accomplish something in less than a century span, you've got to get on with it. And so that there's limitlessness, we're infinite, and there's limits, we're finite. Embrace both.
Dr. Lesson, thank you. We're running up here to close to 1 hour. I hope that this has been recording okay. Every once in a while, the system seems to lock up for just a little bit. I'm going to try to go back and maybe have to edit parts of this program because it is pre-recorded. And I don't think we want to do this whole program all over again. Wow. I do know you will be back on the live program with me. And when I have you back live, I would say, folks, bring your callers and bring your questions.
Cool.
This is the time for you to open up and say, where is this? In all this that I've been doing here with the Sedona Connection, I have never, ever before felt like I was ever more in the right place at the right time about who I am and what I'm supposed to do. And it's all making sense. It's all falling into place. And you come to that point where you have that such sense of assurance within yourself that you feel like nothing's going to stop you.
Yeah, we're all humble servants, a part of one great plan.
Yeah. I mean, I do. I have people ask me, says, well, aren't you, you're poking the cabal in the face. you're not just poking them in the eye, you're slapping them and punching them in the nose sometimes with what you're saying. And I says, well, I don't intend to do that, because I will come to them with love and compassion. But I will say the truth needs to be told, because it's as in the words of Jesus, when you know the truth sets you free. And we're here to be free. We're here to be a human race that is to be free, free within ourselves, free so that we can live what is called the divine assignments in our lives, free so that we can move into what is called a divine paradigm within all of us, and helping shifting and changing this world and bringing about the world that we all want to live in, not only for ourselves, but what we want to pass on to our children and our grandchildren. Any concluding comments? Anything you'd like to say?
It's been a pleasure rapping with you, and I look forward to doing it again. Oh, and thanks for listening, everybody.
Absolutely. I've been sitting here. I'm in this big, huge, comfortable chair, but I'm sitting here in this absolute paradise as I'm looking out. Folks, I know I don't have the liberty to tell you where he lives, but I can say it's a journey getting to his house. A quick side note. Now, how long have you lived here?
About 37, 38 years.
You have lived in this house for 37 to 38 years. All I know is that you come up this road, and it's a really narrow little paved road, and then the road ends, and then you've got this gate that you have a lock that you have to go through, and then you come up your car in a dirt road, and then you are coming up to this place where it's literally a tropical paradise as I'm looking around me. And it's like you're almost right in the middle of a tropical jungle. And you've lived in this house for 37 years.
First thing I did was plant the trees even before there was a house here. So we have all the fruit trees.
It's just absolute. This is, I'm getting to sit in a home here that is the paradise of Hawaii. And it truly is. And this has been my second trip here to Maui. I've loved it here. I've fallen in love with this place here. People are always saying, are you going to move there? And I thought, no. Sedona's my home. Sedona will always be my home. But I can tell you, I have a hunch that Maui's going to become a second home for me. Because when the day comes, the funds are released, and I don't have to worry about money and traveling. Believe me, I can spend lots of time here and lots of time in Sedona. But I love Sedona, and that's why I call the program here the Sedona Connection. I'm very deeply connected to that place. But this is the one that's running second best for me.
We love Sedona, too. Been there many times. We used to work for ISTA, the Transpersonal Tantra Association, and Tracy Elise, who had her practice in Sedona, is our very, very dear friend.
We got sidetracked here a little bit. We were about ready to wrap up the program, but we're talking about these two wonderful places. And I think of all the places here in North America and the United States, it's like Hawaii and Sedona are the two what I call the magical places. They are the places where there's an energy and a vibration of the planet that's stronger than almost anywhere else. And this is one of those, and I know I live in one of those. And I don't think that's a coincidence that we're finding each other in these two separate places. Because in the essence, everything in the universe is about energy, how we function around energy and stuff like that. So I'm hearing some music in the background. Where's that coming from?
It's probably Janet's telephone.
Maybe that's time is telling us to wrap up. Okay, folks. Well, let me see. I want to take one more second. It looked like this kind of locked up on me a little bit, because I don't want to wrap up with nothing being said there. It's going to come. There we are. Now we're back on. Folks, I want to thank all of you for joining us this week on the Sedona Connection. This is a program. It will be a pre-recorded program. You'll listen to it live on the regular time on 6 p.m. on Wednesday night on the Pacific time, 9 p.m. on the East Coast. Shortly after the program is over, about 10 to 15 minutes, it will be available for a download. You can download it as an MP3 file. You can listen to this program as many times as you want. This is one of those that I think of all the programs that I've done, this is the one that has probably been the closest to my heart. It is one that has probably sent the message and declared the things I've wanted to say more than anything else. And I feel like we have just started, my friend.
Cool.
Okay, great. Thank you very much, folks. Love all of you. Okay, see you next week. Okay, bye-bye.